We finished on multicast this morning. I think maybe the explanation of the details of what happened in a subnet may have confused some people, so I'll try and go through that one more time, but with a little bit more detail in the example, and make sure we can distinguish between the two types of, or the operations at two different layers, at layer 2, for example, using Ethernet, and at layer 3, using IP. I don't have the entire network, but this is part of what I drew this morning, where we had some source, we had some routers, I cannot remember at all, and we had essentially three different paths that we had to forward the packets to reach the destinations. There was some path up here to a destination, there was some path over here to some destinations here, and some path down here. We want to focus on what happens in detail in this portion of the network. We won't look at all of the forwarding. So we're talking about IP multicast, which is multicasting an IP packet across an internet, an IP network. So here we have many subnets, many routers connecting them together. This is our entire internet. We're doing multicast from one source to multiple destinations. There were two here, I think there were two over here, and one up here. So the source creates a normal IP datagram with some data, a header, and two things in the header include the source IP address, which would be the IP address of this computer. Let's call it computer A, or computer with IP address A. I will not write the full address. And the destination for multicast is a specific multicast group address. Starting, here's an example of a multicast group address, 225.78.1. I think that's what we used this morning. The packet is forwarded through the internet. The main difference of the forwarding is that normally with unicast forwarding, the normal internet communications, a packet goes to a router sends it on to one other router, and eventually delivers that packet to one destination host. With multicast, forwarding is slightly different in that when a packet gets to this router, that packet may be duplicated, copied, and sent in multiple different directions so that it will reach the multiple destinations. So the main difference there in the forwarding is that with multicast, a router may make multiple copies of the packet and send it in multiple different directions. With unicast, the router sends in one direction, just one copy. So we could think of the multicast routing tables as normal routing tables. Let's give some addresses to these routers. And for the IP addresses, I'll just use letters. So this is address A. This router here has address B on this interface. C here, D here, and others will have addresses as well. IP addresses, the letters are. So let's look at this router. A multicast router. Multicast routing protocols will create essentially routing tables. We can think this is having a routing table. If we simplify the routing table of this router, it may look like this. If I need some more space. The simplest way we can view a routing table is two columns, the destination and the next device that we send it to. We normally identify the destination by a network address, and the next is either a router or direct. If the next device is another router, we give the router address. If the next device is a host, then we often will say it's called a direct link. So the routing table from this router, it may have many routes to different routers, but looking at the multicast information, it should have some information that says that this destination multicast address, 70.8.1. If the destination is this multicast address, then what's the next node? Well, from memory, we had some hosts here. We actually had some hosts down here. I can't remember the exact structure, and we had one up here. They were our hosts in our multicast group. So this multicast router would have an entry which specifies that the next node should be... Actually, we need another one. We need to send to E. This is the next node to reach this destination. We need to send to C and D. Normally, our routing tables have a destination and a single next node. We can think of in a multicast router, the main difference is that we have multiple next nodes because we may make copies and send to multiple destinations. So packet comes into B, an IP packet. The destination address in the IP packet is this. It matches this row. Therefore, the router knows to send copies of that packet to E, to C, and to D. That's the concept of forwarding with multicasting. It's very similar to normal IP forwarding, except we have multiple potential destinations or multiple next nodes. Similar, a routing table for D. Destination. The routing table for D should say if the destination is 225.70.8.1, the next node, well, these two nodes are not on another network. They're directly attached to this subnet. So I'll simply write direct. As you see, different software may use different notation, but that's the meaning. If a packet comes into this router with this destination address, then we do not forward to another router. We send directly to the hosts. Now, which hosts? We need to know, this router needs to know which host to send to, because this is a multicast address. It may be more than one. So somehow the router also needs to keep track of the hosts which have joined this multicast group. So let's keep another list of, let's say, group members. This is just a concept. It doesn't necessarily mean it's implemented this way, but the router also records the hosts which have subscribed to it or have subscribed to a multicast group via this router. Every host that wants to receive multicast packets uses IGMP to subscribe to a group. And the way that they subscribe is they send a message to their local multicast router. So the local multicast router of this host is this router. When it said, I want to subscribe to 225.70.8.1, this router stored some information that says that, okay, subscribe to this group. Let's give it an IP address. Where are we up to? F and G. Is F as well as G. That is a list of groups and the members subscribe to that group, each group. Here we just have one group and there are two hosts subscribed to that. So, with this information, this IP datagram will get to this router. The destination address matches this entry, says make a copy, send to E, C, and D. One of the copies gets to D, D receives a datagram, destination 225.70.8.1. Router says send direct. That is, there are some hosts on your LAN that should receive this packet. So to send direct, which hosts? It looks at the group members. Okay, there are two hosts on this subnet which are members of this group. Send a copy of that packet to each of them. So that's what is needed for IP multicast to work. How was this created? When each node subscribes to a group or joins a group, we add them to the list. If this node leaves the group, it sends a special message to its local multicast router, which removes it from the group. In addition, the routing tables are created using exchanging information between the routers, and that exchange of information is part of a multicast routing protocol. So that keeps this information up to date. If these two hosts leave this group, then these entries will be deleted. In addition, this should be deleted. In addition, this router should tell this router, you no longer need to send multicast packets for this group to me. Because if there's no destinations here, there's no need for B to send to D. It only needs to send to E and C. So as these hosts leave the group, it will impact on the routing table of other routers. And in fact, that's why multicasting is not so common in the internet, because it's very complex to get right. Very complex routing, because this computer leaves the group, it may impact on many routers through the internet as to what's the best path. So why would a computer leave a group? It leaves a website, or it shuts down an application. It no longer wants to view the video being streamed. So as group members change, it may impact upon the routing tables, and that's very complex to keep track of. That's one of the limitations of IP multicast. What I went through this morning, I also introduced, okay, how do we get the datagram? A datagram arrives at this router. This router knows it needs to send to E, C, and D. How do we get the datagram from B to C and D in an efficient manner? It depends on what this technology is. Is it Ethernet? Is it a ADSL or a set of ADSL links or SDH or a wide area network technology? It depends what technology is here as to how do we deliver two datagrams from B to both C and D. We went through the example with Ethernet that said that if we now look in the detail, if this is an Ethernet network, then one way it may be structured is that this is a switch with a link, a cable going from the router to switch, and then cables here. So we've got one IP packet to send to two destinations. There are different approaches we can use inside this network. If it's an Ethernet network, we can use Ethernet unicast. Take the IP datagram and create two frames. So the IP datagram had the IP header here, the data, and we create an Ethernet frame. We add an Ethernet header. Inside that Ethernet header, we have a source and destination address, where these are MAC addresses or 48-bit addresses, not IP addresses. So let's say the MAC address of this interface, the IP address is B, let's call the MAC address M1, MAC 1. And this one has MAC address M2, and this one M3. These are the 48-bit addresses. Then the source address of this frame will be M1. Using unicast, the destination address, if we want to send to this host or this router, will be M2. with unicast, we'll create two frames. This is one of them. The second frame will have a source of M1 and a destination of M3. And we'll just send them separately, send two packets. That's one way to send one IP datagram to two different destinations on an Ethernet network. But in fact, Ethernet has its own multicast mechanism. We've been talking about IP multicast, multicast across an Internet. Inside an individual Ethernet LAN, there's also a possibility of multicast. We create an Ethernet frame, and the source will be M1, but the destination has a special Ethernet multicast address. It starts, or the most common ones start with, I think, 01, and there's some structure. The 48-bit address, so there's some structure for Ethernet multicast addresses. And if this network is set up and the switch is configured correctly, then this router sends one Ethernet frame to the switch. The switch knows from the Ethernet multicast address to send a copy to two destinations, to M2 and M3. That saves us on sending one packet. With unicast, we send two packets to here, one and one. We send four packets. With Ethernet multicast, we can cut that down to three. One, and then one, and one. So we can use multicast inside a subnet. But different technologies don't allow, or other technologies do not necessarily allow multicast. So that's just one example. Instead of Ethernet, maybe these are direct links. This is a PDH link, and this is an SDH optical fiber link across a city. There's no way to multicast. We have to send a copy here and a copy here. So when I spoke about how do we get from here to here, then that was just an example with Ethernet. But most importantly, we can ignore this detail, make sure you understand how do we get this IP datagram from here to the multiple destination hosts. So that was just recap on that example we went through this morning so that everyone's clear and not so confused about the difference between IP multicast, which is what we focused on, and also within Ethernet you can have a separate multicast mechanism. Depends on what this technology is as to how to get packets from here to here. Any questions on multicast in the internet before we move on to the next part of quality of service? The last thing I mentioned slightly is that, okay, multicast is hard. The routing and forwarding, or the routing mechanisms especially, can be very complex to get it to work well. Because every time a computer leaves a group, we need to potentially update the routing tables, and that becomes complex. Also, something we haven't mentioned, multicast delivery is often unreliable. There are no acknowledgements. We send one datagram from the source. It goes to five destinations. We normally do not use TCP to do that. We usually use an application using UDP because if we use TCP or some reliable protocol, it usually means sending back an acknowledgement. But look what would happen. Let's say we had 1,000 destinations. You know, in a large internet, there are 1,000 people watching a streaming video from one source. If we had acknowledgements, we'd have a source sending one packet going to 1,000 destinations, and then 1,000 destinations all sending an ACK back to the same source. That would overload the source. That is, this sends one packet but receives 1,000. Scale that up to 10,000 or 100,000 nodes. Send one packet, receive 100,000 packets back in response. The source is not going to be able to handle all those acts coming back. So in multicast, normally there are no acknowledgements and therefore very little reliability. If we lose data, too bad. When we look at specific multimedia applications, we'll see the consequence of that. That is, what happens if we lose data? Next topic, related to how do we make sure that we can deliver multimedia applications over the internet. Multicast is one thing that can support, for example, streaming of video and voice. Quality of service is another mechanism to make sure that we can give appropriate levels of service to the different applications. So quality of service means really is talking about how do we control the level of service that we deliver to different users and to different applications. A simple example is that, okay, the faculty members use the SIIT network, which consists of several subnets in this campus and the other campus. Students also use the network. A quality of service mechanism may say, give the faculty members packets higher priority than the students. So when I'm web browsing, my packets going across the SIIT network always go before your packets. That is, give some priority to individual packets. So that's a mechanism for quality of service control, making sure that one set of users get a satisfactory quality of service, but perhaps at the expense of other set of users. So we'll talk about different levels of quality of service. Doesn't have to be based upon users, it can also be based upon applications. IP and the internet is generally considered a best effort service. There are no mechanisms to differentiate between packets being sent across the internet. Everyone is treated the same. IP provides an unreliable delivery service. There's no retransmissions in the internet protocol. TCP adds reliability. But there are no guarantees on performance in TCP. You start downloading a file, there's no guarantee that you're going to get that file transferred at a rate of 1 megabit per second. So there's no guarantees there. The internet gives us the best effort it can, but that may mean a very low performance. Some applications would work better if they can get performance guarantees. And you notice this because when you use applications like watching videos online, unless you have a good internet connection, the quality of those videos can be quite low. Either the quality in terms of the size of the image, the size of the frame, or the quality in terms of seeing poor images or jitter between frames. That is, you see the video freeze and start and freeze all the time. That's because the quality in the network is not sufficient to support that application. Some examples. Watching normal TV over the internet, referred to as IPTV, and we'll cover that in some detail in the next topic, roughly requires about 6 megabits per second. So if you're to watch IPTV, that is to watch a real TV station streamed to a standard definition screen, say a 42-inch screen in your home, then you need about 6 megabits per second download. Anyone have 6 megabit per second internet links? Some of them are today. But whether you can get a continual throughput of 6 megabits per second is unlikely. If you don't, then your TV will not look very good. That is, the content will not display well. Another aspect, voice conversations. Having voice calls over the internet. For good quality voice calls, you normally need delay less than 100 milliseconds. And jitter less than 5 milliseconds. Remember, jitter is the variance of the delay. If it starts to go above this, then when you're talking to someone, it starts to become difficult to have a conversation. And other applications may have other requirements. Some businesses may have requirements to make sure that they can transfer data between their different offices or campuses at a particular speed. So different applications and users desire performance guarantees. But the internet doesn't have any inbuilt performance guarantees. So how do we provide them? Well, there are some specific quality of service mechanisms available. What is quality of service? It refers to statistical performance guarantees that a network can make about different performance metrics. The common performance metrics are packet loss, delay, jitter, and throughput. But there are others, but they are the four most common ones. That is, quality of service may say that give user A, guarantee that user A gets a throughput of 1 megabit per second. Guarantee that people making voice calls will get a delay of less than 20 milliseconds. That's some of the objectives of a quality of service mechanism. There are different ways to do this, to provide such guarantees. So we'll go through some of those mechanisms. Quality of service is only an issue, we only care about it when the network utilization is high. That is, if we have a 100 megabit per second link from this campus to the other campus, and we want to have video and voice applications between the two campuses, but the utilization of that link is around 2 or 3 megabits per second. That is, we have a link that can send 100 megabits per second, but we're only using 2 or 3 megabits per second. The utilization is very low. We don't need any quality of service mechanisms because there'll be no congestion on that link. The delay will be as good as we can get. So quality of service mechanisms are only really needed if the network utilization is high. If that link, which was carrying all the faculty members' traffic between campuses, as well as all the students' traffic between campuses, if the link is 100 megabits per second and we're currently using 95 megabits per second, then that's when quality of service mechanisms may become useful. To say that, okay, if we reach capacity, I want to make sure all the faculty members' traffic is given priority. Whereas any students' traffic who are browsing Facebook can have their packets dropped. So that's a mechanism that may be applied to make sure that we achieve our objectives. We can classify the mechanisms into two parts, hard and soft quality of service. We'll cover them. Actually, three types, hard quality of service, soft quality of service, no quality of service. That is, no quality of service mechanisms applied. Hard quality of service we'll see provides guarantees of performance. Soft quality of service provides relative performance guarantees. And no quality of service just treats everyone the same. Doesn't matter whether you're faculty, whether you're browsing Facebook or browsing or accessing an important file from a server, you get the same treatment. That is, the packets that you're sending and receiving get the same treatment. We're going to go through hard and soft quality of service mechanisms. Soft quality of service is also referred to as service differentiation. The idea is to give different levels of service to different users and different applications. Give voice applications one level of service, Video applications, a higher level of service. Web browsing, a lower level of service. That's the idea. And to give relative performance between them. It's most often dealing with what we call flows or sessions or groups of flows. What does that mean? Here's a simple network where we have four hosts. Let's call the IP address A, B, C, and D, and two routers. A flow, or a session, is, we can think of the set of IP packets going between a pair of hosts across our network that belong to one application. I have a web browser running on computer A. It's using source port or port number 51362. And we have a web server here listening on port number 80. In addition, we have some other applications. We're going to have a voice caller. That is, someone is going to use an application to make a voice call from this computer to this computer. This is the caller, this is the callee, and that has some port number, so that application, when it runs on your computer, gets a port number. Gives some random number. And let's give one more application. This one is using an FTP download. So this is the client. He's downloading a file from this FTP server. I think FTP uses port 21. And a client. So I've just given some port numbers. So we have three applications or three application sessions running in this network. We have from here to here, from here to this one, and also from this voice call to here through our network. So each one of them we'll call a flow or a session. An application session or an application flow. And with quality service mechanisms, we normally treat them differently. That is, this flow is identified by, actually we'll draw it over here. We have three flows. And we can identify each flow based upon the addresses they're using. The first flow between the web browser and web server is from computer A to computer C. A is the IP address of that computer. The port number it's using is 51362. And it's going to C using port number 80. The second flow is the voice call going from D with port number 48123 going to B 48446 And the third flow is the file download or file transfer using FTP. FTP is a protocol for downloading files. It's going from computer D with port number 50013 to computer A, port number 21. So the IP address and port number are used to identify a flow. A fifth thing that we may use to identify may be the protocol being used. This one's using TCP. Our voice may be using UDP. And FTP may be using TCP as well. These are IP addresses. A, C are IP addresses. These are port numbers, and this is a protocol, a transport protocol. These five items identify the flow in the network. So we have three flows identified by these items. And that's normal throughout the internet. That is, if we look at any of those five values, we can uniquely identify a flow in the internet. If I start my web browser connects to another web server, a web server running on D, then the web browser will have a port number different from this one, and the destination will have an IP address different from C. So starting another session gives us another flow through the network. So one of our objectives may be, let's give... So this is the flow number, the identifying information, identifiers. That is the things of the packets that identify each flow. And we may want to give in our network each flow a different level of service. Maybe we want to give our voice high priority, our web browsing normal, and our file download background priority. That is, because voice needs good or low delay to work well, we may give the packets belonging to the voice flow highest priority. Web browsing, we just treat as normal priority. Background, I mean, transfer the packets when nothing else is being sent in the background, when all the other applications do not need to have their packets sent. It's like the lowest priority. So that's just an example how we may differentiate between the different flows. So service differentiation, even hard quality of service, often tries to provide a quality of service or a priority level to each flow. But it can also treat a set of flows the same. Instead of caring whether the voice call is between computer D and B, the network may say, let's treat all voice calls the same. Let's give them all high priority. That's operating on a class or a group or an aggregate of flows. Give all voice traffic high priority. Give all FTP downloads in the network low priority or background priority. In the internet, the set of mechanisms that aim to provide soft quality service are referred to as DiffServe or differentiated services. We see it's just rearranged service differentiation. The name is DiffServe. In this example network, which is the same topology as ours, we have two hosts, two routers. We have a link between the two routers which supports 1 megabit per second. We can transfer data that comes into the router one and send it out at 1.5 megabits per second. That's our, let's call this our bottleneck capacity. That is, these links are greater than 1.5 megabits per second. That is, this is 100, this is 100, 100, 100. Bottleneck means the lowest value along the path. Let's say host 1 and host 2 are sending at a rate larger than 1.5 megabits per second. Then what's going to happen is that at the router, packet delay and packet loss is going to occur. These are sending at, let's say, 2 megabits per second. 2 and sending at 2. Packets are coming into the router at a total of 4 megabits per second. Coming out is only 1.5. Where does the remaining 2.5 go? Well, the packets are eventually dropped by the router and do not reach the destination. That's a problem with some applications. With TCP applications, it means our TCP performance is going to drop. With UDP applications, it means the packets just won't get to the destination. So we'd like to sometimes treat the packets differently depending on what applications are running on host 1 and host 2 and what users are using them. Same network, same situation, except now we have two different applications. We have a 1 megabit per second video application. And for that video application to work well, it needs low delay and packet loss. And the other application is a file transfer. FTP is a protocol for transferring files. It has no strict time constraints. That is, it doesn't matter. We don't care whether it takes 10 minutes to download the file or 11 minutes. Whereas we do care with the video that the packets are being delivered with a small delay and that few packets are being lost. So what we'd like to do is give priority to the video application. We have a video application sending packets, an FTP application sending packets. If packets are going to be dropped and queued up at the router, we'd like to give priority to the video application packets. So how do we give priority? In the router, we have a queue. And inside that queue, we give priority to the packets belonging to video. Let's illustrate that. Here's our router. We can think we have two groups of packets coming in, one from host 1 and one from host 2. And let's say from host 1 is our video packets. And from host 2 coming in are FTP packets. FTP is the file transfer protocol for transferring files. And our router, we need to send all of them out on our link to R2. This is R1, R2 is there. Packets come in from host 1, from host 2. They need to all go out on the same link. Our problem would be if this is coming in at a rate of 2 megabits per second, and at 2 megabits per second, but we can only send out at 1.5, then we're going to have problems in our queues. And the way a router works is that normally there's a queue on the input. As a packet comes in, it's put inside memory in a queue. And each input would have its own queue. And then there's a process inside the router, the software, that grabs a packet from the input queue, looks at the destination address, compares it to the routing table. So we'd have a routing table in memory here. Destination, next, whatever the entries are. A packet's in the queue. This piece of software looks at the packet header, compares to the destination in the routing table, and then decides where to send it. In this router, we only have one output, or we're only going to send in one direction. We're going to send all the packets in this direction. And this is an input queue. This is an output queue of the router. So be careful that this is for packets coming in. This is for packets that are about to be transmitted out. This is just our router software that looks at the packets and decides where to send them. I think it's clear that if packets are coming in at, say, 2 megabits per second, 2 million bits per second come in from this link, and another 2 million bits per second come in from this link, then in 1 second we've got 4 million bits coming in. They're put inside the queues, but we've only got 1.5 going out. The other 2.5 megabits every second are going to be dropped by the router. That's our problem. So, what we need to do is give some priority to the video packets. The normal mechanism of a queue is to operate in a first-in, first-out manner. The first packet that comes into this queue, the router looks where to send it, puts it here, puts to the head of the queue. The packet at the head of the queue will be the first one sent out. So let's say the blue packets represent the video and the red packets are FTP, the file transfer. So if we have a packet that comes from video and a packet that comes from FTP at the same time, the router will say select the first one from here, put it in the transmit queue, the queue to be transmitted, and then take one from FTP, put it in the transmit queue, and so on. And on average, they would alternate, or we'd have about half as many red packets as blue packets in the queue, where the red ones are FTP. A first-in, first-out queue treats all of the packets the same. No one gets priority. As you come in, you go out. So that's a problem if we want to give priority to the video packets. So what our objective is, if we have a set of packets in the queue to be transmitted, some of them are video packets, some are FTP packets. If we want to give priority to our video, then simply transmit the video packets first. We've got four packets in the queue, two video, two FTP packets. This indicates the order in which they arrived in this queue. First, second, third, and fourth. We transmit the video packet. Okay, good. Then this red one would move to the head of the queue. Instead of transmitting the red FTP packet, since we realize there's another video packet in there, transmit that one. So transmit all the video packets in the queue first, and then transmit the FTP packets. That's one example of giving priority to the video application, because all the packets belonging to the video application are going to be transmitted before the FTP packets are. The delay of the video packets will go down, because that is the time that they have to wait in the queue is going to be reduced, because they don't have to wait for the FTP packets. And the packet loss for the video should go down. If the queue gets full, if the queue could hold six packets, it's full, and another packet arrives, a video packet arrives, what do we do? Well, normally we would drop either the packet that arrived or one of the packets from the queue. So to give priority to the voice, sorry, to the video, drop one of the FTP packets. That is, this FTP packet in the queue, let's remove it from the queue and put this video packet in there. This is the queue to transmit packets. These are the queues as which they arrive into the router. So we've got two mechanisms in play. Giving priority to the video packets for the transmission from the queue, and also giving priority to the video packets when we're dropping packets from the queue. So less video packets get dropped, and video packets are delayed less than the FTP packets. So that's the basic mechanism to giving priority. Now, how to implement that such that both the video and the FTP application still get some data through is depends on the exact queuing mechanism. So there are many different algorithms as to when to decide which packet to drop and whether to allow all video packets to be sent before FTP or perhaps only allow three of the video packets to be sent before you can send one FTP packet. And those mechanisms are called queuing mechanisms or queuing disciplines. But the concept is to treat the packets differently in the queues in the router. How does that work? Based on the flow information. That is, how do we know this is a video packet and this is a FTP packet? The router just receives packets. It doesn't know that someone out here is using a video application and someone using FTP. It just receives the IP packets. So this IP packet, if we draw it, has an IP header, a transport header, and some data. The IP header identifies the source and destination IP addresses, for example, D and B. The transport layer header, or the IP header also indicates the transport protocol, for example, UDP. And the transport layer header, that is the UDP packet header, indicates the port numbers. So the router uses this information to determine how to treat the packet. If we recognize from the port numbers that this is a voice application transferring packets, then give it some priority. If it's a video application, give it some priority. If it's web browsing, give it a different level of priority. So this information, the identifying information of IP addresses, port numbers, and transport protocols are used to determine what treatment to give individual packets. Another thing that we can use is to add an additional piece of information to each packet called a packet mark or a type of service field. There's one other part of the IP header one field in the IP header that we haven't talked about much, you may have seen it in some old lectures, which is called the DiffServe field. It's used for this differentiated services mechanism. It indicates some level of priority for this packet. I think there are normally between the levels of priority are between 0 and 7. 7 is the highest priority, 0 is the lowest priority. So, in fact, we now have another field to identify how to treat the packet. We can determine how to treat the packet based upon the source and destination computers, the IP addresses, the source and destination applications. And remember, port numbers will often identify the type of application. If we see port 80, we assume it's web browsing. If we see port 21, file transfer. In fact, even voice applications use specific port numbers. So from the port number, we can work out what type of application. And another field, the DiffServe field inside the IP header, can also be used to give priority to packets. So a router has packets coming in, looks at all of this information, DiffServe, source, destination, makes a decision. Okay, this is video. This packet belongs to a video session. I'm going to put that at the head of the queue. receives another packet. Ah, this is FTP. I'm going to put that at the end of the queue, or I'm going to drop that packet, depending upon the policy of the router. That's a lot of information, but the basics of how we treat packets differently and therefore give different levels of service to different applications and users. Any questions so far? Okay, for a quiz. We need one more quiz this semester. So what we're going to do is go through the mechanisms needed to make the service differentiation work. So far, what we've seen, we can identify flows in the internet based on source and destination addresses of both hosts and applications. Routers can treat packets differently using different queuing mechanisms. A router is made up of a set of queues. As packets come in, they're put into a queue and have to wait. As packets are to be transmitted on the output link, they're put in a queue and have to wait. By treating the packets in the queue differently, giving some preference over others, then we can give priority to different applications and users. One thing a router may do is to mark a packet with this diff serve or type of service field. A packet comes in to this router. The router recognizes the source address is D, destination B, source port number, and destination port number. It reads that from the packet here. And the router has some other information, a database. A router has a database of information which stores quality of service information, which says that video and voice get high priority, file downloads get low priority. So a packet comes in. The router recognizes from the address it's a video or voice application packet. From this information, it knows to give higher priority, so it marks the diff serve field to the high priority value. One of the, for example, the value 4. Another packet comes in. The router recognizes this is an FTP packet belonging to an FTP application. It recognizes based upon the port number. Port 21 is used by FTP. It marks the diff serve field of that packet to be low priority. If this was the packet that came in, it would mark the diff serve field to say 0, lowest priority. Then subsequent routers can simply look at the diff serve field to work out how to treat that packet. The next router that receives it, router 2, sees diff serve equals 0, lowest priority. It doesn't have to look at the IP address and the port numbers. So by using this field and marking packets, we can save the effort of subsequent routers in the internet. Our example only has 2 routers. In the real internet, there may be a set of different routers. So packet marking is the process of recognizing what type of application and what user the packet belongs to and setting a particular diff serve field to a priority level based upon what that application or user is, what level of priority that application or user should receive. Let's look at the other mechanisms. How do we, and I think we've covered this, how do we know what level of priority a packet gets? Well, we have some classifier. We classify the packets. And the criteria we've seen, we can classify packets based on source and destination addresses, port numbers, and the diff serve field. that's been assigned. Based on the classification, from looking at this information, the router determines, okay, this classification means high priority, then we treat those packets differently. The way that we treat those packets differently is by using different queuing schemes or giving them priority inside a queue at the transmitter of the router. There are many different queuing algorithms or queuing schemes. FIFO is the basic first-in, first-out, the simplest one. But there are others that give priority to different types of packets based upon different requirements, making sure fairness between applications, giving a particular data rate for some applications. There are many different queuing schemes. We're not going to look at them. The priority that is given to different packets is some policy decision. That's made by the internet service provider. You as a customer go to the ISP and make a contract with them. Okay, I'm going to pay an extra 1,000 baht per month such that my video packets should get high priority. So you as a customer make some agreement with the ISP and the ISP implements that policy. It sets up the routers so that when packets come from the IP source address, which corresponds to my computer, so I'm a customer of the ISP, if the packets come to the router with an IP source address of my computer, then the router is configured to recognize, okay, this is from Steve's computer. All of Steve's packets need to be given highest priority because he's paid an extra amount per month. So that's a part of the policy set by the ISP based upon the agreement, the contractual agreements between a customer and the ISP. So that's how the router knows which packets or knows what level of service to give to which packets based on some agreement there. Normally, these mechanisms are not used by individuals but are used by companies. That is, a company that uses an ISP's network may pay and say that all of their packets are given a certain level of service. Of course, we can buy premium ISP services. You can pay for a business level ISP service. You pay more money, you get the same data rate, but you get more guarantees in the performance in your internet access. Another aspect or another mechanism used is metering and policing. What if our application sends at a higher rate than agreed upon? Then the router sometimes may measure how much is coming in from that particular application, and if it goes above some agreed upon rate, then start to police that in somehow, either drop the packets or at least mark them such that they may be dropped later. So let's say our customer here has an agreement that says, okay, we want high quality for our video, but we agree that we'll only send at 1 megabit per second. So that's the agreement between the customer and the ISP. But for some reason, the video application starts sending at 2 megabits per second. Well, metering is about the router measuring that. If we're measuring, okay, it's 900 kilobits per second, now it's going up to 1 megabit per second, now it's 1.1, then now something triggers in the router that says, okay, this application is sending faster than the agreed upon rate. What do we do about that? Well, that's what policing is about. There's different things we can do. We can start to drop packets. So if it starts sending in at 2 megabits per second, we just drop half of them. So it only gets sending out at 1 megabit per second. Or we may mark those packets so that they may be dropped later on. Let them through now, but mark them in some way such that another router may drop them if they need to. So that's metering and policing of packets in the internet. There are different mechanisms for doing that. Again, we're not going to cover the mathematics of those mechanisms like buckets and queuing mechanisms. So they are some of the, well, they are the main mechanisms needed for providing different services to different applications and users. Service differentiation or soft quality of service does not guarantee any performance. It just treats packets differently. If we have our 1.5 megabit per second link here, video is sending in at 1 megabit per second, and FTP is sending in at 1 megabit per second, we may give preference to the video packets, but in general, we cannot guarantee that the video will get a specific data rate. Because in fact, in our real routers, there are many different sources, many different input links, and many applications coming on each input link. So we cannot guarantee that a particular application will get a given throughput or a minimum delay. That is, we can still have packet loss at routers, and we can still have extra delays at routers. So it's just providing different levels of service. So what we may configure our router to say is that the video application gets 75% of the output link. And other applications get the remaining 25%. But if, so those other applications, if those other applications, if there's more than just one host here, but there are multiple hosts, then they'll have to share that 25%. If there are many hosts, each host will get almost zero. That is, that 25% of the output link will be shared amongst many hosts. So there's no guarantee for those hosts as to the performance they'll achieve. The alternative, or the other mechanism, is called hard quality of service, and that's where we provide guarantees. And there's only one way to provide guarantees, and that is to limit the number of packets that can come into the network. If we don't control that, then we cannot control and make sure that all packets give a specified level of service. So there are two mechanisms needed for guaranteed or hard quality of service: reserve resources and admission control. In the internet, the name of the system or architecture that provides guaranteed or hard quality of service is referred to as integrated services, or INTSERV. The other one was DiffServe, differentiated services. This is integrated services. They're just architectures that provide the basic mechanisms. There are specific implementations of them. Again, it's usually applied at the flow level. Each individual flow is given some specific treatment. How does it work? We have resource reservation. What we do is, before we start to send data, I want to have a video call from this source to this destination. Before I start to send any data, I reserve resources along the path in the internet. I send a special message through the internet, and I tell this, or I ask this router, I want to set up a video call. Do you have sufficient resources to support that video call? If yes, it will forward the request onto the next router. Let's say we need 1 megabit per second for this voice, for this video call. So we'd send a message saying, we need 1 megabit per second. Do you have enough resources? If yes, it will send it on. If yes, okay, it will get to here. This one says, are you prepared to receive my video call? Sends back a response. And then the resources for that video call are reserved along the entire path. Each router is prepared to send at 1 megabit per second for that individual video call. So we reserve resources in this case. In DiffServe, we didn't do that. in DiffServe, the hosts just send when they need to. And the routers treat the packets differently. There was nothing to stop 100 different hosts starting an FTP session on this part of the network. Whereas in InServe, our applications, before they start sending packets, do this special resource reservation mechanism, and they tell all the routers in the path how many resources they need. If the routers have enough resources and are willing to support that application, then they respond in a positive manner. What are those resources? Capacity on the output link. If this link supports 1.5 megabits per second, and currently 1 megabit per second is in use by other applications. So it supports 1.5, one is in use. This voice, video application starts by sending a resource request saying, I want to set up a new video application that requires 1 megabit per second. This router would send back a negative response saying, no, you cannot. I've got 1.5 megabit per second available in total. I'm currently using one. Therefore, I cannot support a new video application that requests another one. If this one supported 5 megabits per second, currently one was in use, this one requests 1 megabit per second, then it could say yes and send it onto this router, which then makes the decision itself based on the resources available on the link and also inside the queues inside the router. How much queuing space, how much processing capacity the router has. Once the resources are agreed upon in this initial setup, they are reserved for the entire duration of that video call. No one else can use those resources. And that's how we guarantee performance. If we guarantee that over this link, we're going to allocate 1 megabit per second for this one video application, no one else can use that 1 megabit per second of capacity on the link. And therefore, we'll get the desired quality of service for the entire duration of the call. And that's what we get, although it's not said here, is admission control. Admission control is simply saying, before you start sending your data, you send a request saying, I need to set reserve X megabits per second. If the network can support it, it may admit your call into the network. If it cannot support it, it may reject your call. You're not admitted into the network. And by doing so, we can give guaranteed performance to those applications. We're not going to go into much or any more detail of either of those mechanisms. The main point is to realize for quality of service that what is it about? Importantly, that routers control the treatment at which the packets receive based upon the queuing mechanisms, that we can classify packets based upon this information of IP addresses and port numbers. Sometimes we can mark packets with the DiffServe field, and that we have these two different mechanisms of soft quality of service, of simply treating applications differently but providing no guarantees, and hard quality of service, guaranteed quality of service, which requires applications to reserve resources before they use them. As a result, those resources are always available, and therefore the guaranteed performance is offered or is available. Comparing the two mechanisms, DiffServe, as we said, doesn't provide guarantees. Hard quality of service, or InServe, does. This one's more complex than that one because we need this additional resource reservation. If you can remember back to data communications, we compared circuit switching with datagram packet switching. This one is like circuit switching. We set up a circuit beforehand and then send our data. DiffServe is like simple packet switching. We simply send our packets and let the routers treat them differently. There's some relationship there. Circuit switching and hard quality of service mechanisms like InServe allow you to reserve the resources all the way along the path. That's complex, but it's good for the applications. Today in the internet, neither approach is widely used. They're only used, and especially diff serve, inside individual ISPs networks. So some ISPs may choose to use some of these mechanisms in their own network. But for you and I, to get guaranteed performance for my video application across from my computer to somewhere in the US, there are no inbuilt mechanisms to support that. I cannot set the quality of service level of my packets and be guaranteed that they'll be treated in the appropriate way all the way across the internet. Different ISPs will implement these mechanisms in different ways. However, as we see in the next topic when we look at IPTV, that is delivering TV over an internet or an IP network, some of these mechanisms are starting to be applied. So that's enough for today. That just gives a very, very simple introduction to what is quality of service and some of the mechanisms. And this morning, multicast. In the next topic, multimedia applications, voice, video, and including TV over the internet, and we'll see how they can make use of those mechanisms. So let's continue that next week. The assignment should be released before next week, the next assignment. So, and it's going to involve doing similar things as the last assignment of doing performance tests. Last time you used iPerf to do some UDP tests. This time you'll be learning about the performance of TCP, again using iPerf. Most likely you'll need to use Linux. Most of you, or some of you did last time, but some additional software that I'll recommend using will require you to use Linux. So if you don't already have access to it, again, you'll be in groups. So if you don't have access to it, either install it on your computer or you'll have to use some of the lab computers. But that will be released in the next few days.